Ah, you found us, and we say welcome to Caching in the Northwest. This is the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the great Pacific Northwest. We're going to talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the continent. So while you're post-holing your way to the next GZ, we will be caching in the Northwest. And in fact, we have somebody who looks like they're out caching in the Northwest right this very minute.
Well, yeah, sort of. Wit's End here. I'm not out caching. This is coming to you from the Northwest. Space Needle is back there somewhere, the downtown Seattle skyline. I'm in South Lake Union. If you know what Mohai is, it's over there. This is just, I got a few minutes to pop in, say hello, greet everybody. Thanks for coming and joining us on Thursday night for Caching the Northwest. And I'm going to give you my little public service announcement to make wise career choices, boys and girls. Otherwise, you work in the entertainment industry, you're working nights for 16 hours a day. So on that note, got to go. Have a great podcast. And hopefully I will be joining you in the studio next Thursday night.
There's
Take
nothing
care, everybody.
Wrong with joining us from South Lake Union.
Stay dry, Jim.
Oh, thank you. Well, even though he spoke up, it is time to bring in our web-footed webcaster. Some say 4 years ago, he won the silver medal for competitive earth caching. And others say this year, he's going for the gold. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Hey, thanks very much. Yes, I did speak up before my turn. I did not wait my turn. I jumped in a little early because I wanted to say goodbye to my good friend. And actually, I think you need to do a little bit of fact check. Actually, I did win the gold medal.
Oh, so you're going for the platinum this year.
I'm going for the three-peat on the gold.
Hmm.
So I've got a title to hold there. Anyways. All kidding aside, you know what? You know what I like?
Timbits.
I do like Timbits. You know what else I like?
Tell me, what else do you like?
But besides Timbits and beer, I also like our patrons. You guys are awesome. Thank you very much, every single one of you. If you're listening right now, if you're live, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. And if you want to know more about our patron program, just click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website.
That's right. Now, tonight, we're going to share some tips with you, some advice, and looking for your input on the subject of snowshoeing. However,
yes,
before we get there, we have to do the glow. Now, this glow was submitted by IHAM, but we want to let you know that if you don't send us glows, we just have to read our own logs.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, full disclosure. This is actually one of my logs. So I figured I would read it tonight because, well, if I wrote it, I should be able to read it in my own voice and give all the inflections where they should be.
Well, this is, you're showcasing what we ask people to do, really. What we really want you guys to do is read your glow to us.
Exactly.
Call 253-693-TFTC and read us your glow.
Read us your glow or do it right into your smartphone. You can email us the file, and we will play the glow in your own voice. And that way you don't have somebody else, like, say, me, misread your glow. You get to put it in your own voice. Now, I wrote this soon after we started the glow, and the whole idea of writing better logs was really fresh in my mind. So this one I found was the geocache called Narwhals Narwhals. GC5RE3J. That's five. I'm really off. Romeo Echo 3 Juliet. And it goes and it starts. Dentist. What can I say about dentist? We all need them, but most of us dread the routine visit. My daughter had a dentist visit, and we arrived 15 minutes early for the appointment. What better way to pass the time than a hunt for a geocache? I needed to find a cache on this day to help me complete my 366-day challenge. Well, I'll admit we did not find it before the appointment. While sitting in the dental office, I read the previous logs in hopes of finding a hidden clue. One log gave away. That's when the screaming started. It didn't sound like my daughter's scream, which puts my mind at ease. However, nobody else in the office is looking away from their magazines or phones. Should I just continue to ignore the cries of agony like those around me? Does this make me just as calloused and uncaring as they are? A sudden silence fills the waiting room. Never mind. My conscience is clear now. The door creaks slightly and a small child emerges. No tears tracks running down her cheek. In fact, she's smiling. It's not my child, and I look away before my before her parents think I'm some sort of weirdo.
Too late.
Probably. I overhear the conversation between the girl's parents and the receptionist. Everything is fine, no cavities. See you again in 6 months, the receptionist said sweetly, but not too sweetly as to cause any cavities. Once they leave, I can focus on reading the logs about this geocache once again. Where was I? Ah, yes, this one log is overly descriptive where the cache is located. Yes, it says, the screams start afresh. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw one of the future victims jump. Without making eye contact with anybody else in the waiting room, he continued to read his 3-year-old copy of Road and Track with great interest. I'm sure the 2013 Honda is a fabulous vehicle. How can it not be? They wrote an entire multi-page article about it. Did the lights just flicker? My pulse quickens and there's a bit of moisture forming on my brow. I cannot allow my conscience to be seared by my inaction. I must do something, say something. How can the people just sit here and do nothing, pretending not to hear the screams, the cries for help? I, for one, can take it no longer. I say we storm that door, break it down, and find out what's going on back there. Who's with me? Now, that's what I would say when I stood up. Good thing I took a moment to practice it in my head once before I rally the troops. Mustering my courage, I jump to my feet and face the others in the waiting room. Just then, the now familiar creak of the door sounds. My daughter stands in the doorway with a look of anguish on her face. What could she have seen in there? What in that torture chamber they call a dental office? I look her over quickly. No torn clothes or blood splatter. She looks fine, except for her facial expression. I rush over and grab her arm. Are you all right? I ask, not really wanting to hear the answer. She looks sheepishly to the front desk area. The receptionist turns to me and says in the same sweet tone, she has two cavities. Can you come back next week? My mind is reeling, trying to take in all that's happening here. I'm slow to answer and simply stare around the room. The others, whom I once considered allies, turn on me and pierce me with questioning looks. Next week? The receptionist asks again. Sure, I guess. She hands me a card and I blindly shove it in my pocket. I cannot wait to rush out that door and never set foot in this place again. Ah, fresh air. My mind is beginning to clear. I feel warm sunshine on my face. Turning to my daughter, I ask, do I even want to know what happened in there? Oh, nothing really. The dentist rolled his chair over the hygienist's foot. Twice, actually. It was quite funny. We found the cache. Love the new container. Thanks.
There you go. That's quite the glow.
Yeah. So there you have it.
So it is about a geocache in the end.
Yeah, it's about a geocache. Yeah, we found it.
Okay.
Oh, right, there's nothing that says you have to write a log really about the geocache.
It's about your day. That's nice. Although that is a good punchline at the end. Got to give you that. The joys of parenthood. All right. Well, you know what? Reminder for everybody out there that if there's some sort of milestone cache find that you're celebrating, if it's just an average day out and you just feel like the number 253693 TFTC pops into your head, give us a call. Share what you're doing. We want to hear you. We want to hear your voice and play it on the podcast and share it with the rest of the community. Or, as Chris said, use the voicemail tool on the website. Record a digital file on your cell phone. There's so many ways you can share with us.
So many ways.
All right. Well, you know what? A little bit of news. We won't do too much news, but we're going to share a little bit of brace yourself, Munzee news. MHQ Bash 5 has set their dates. So that'll be, that's Munzee headquarters Bash. It's a big Munzee event down in Texas, right? I got that right?
Yes, it's the equivalent of a block party.
Okay. The Munzee equivalent of the block party will be Friday, October 26th through Sunday, October 28th, 2018. They have four events, Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday evening, and Sunday morning on the Munzee calendar. I'll be updating folks with more information as soon as they have it, and hope to see everybody in McKinney, Texas in October. So there you go. Start booking your flights if you're Munsey fans. Get your butts down to McKinney, Texas. Okay, Chris, you've been there.
I have been.
What's the largest major Texas city to McKinney?
McKinney? Dallas is actually not too far away. Okay, I
say, if you're planning to fly down, where are you going to book your flights to?
Dallas. McKinney is probably a 20-30 minute drive.
So not Dulles, because that's a different airport.
Right. That's not very bright. They keep it dark in there. It's all gray. It's very dull.
When I first heard about the Dulles airport, which I think was like on Die Hard 2 or something like that. But anyways, I was very confused.
You thought somebody with a southern accent was saying, we're all here in Dulles.
Yeah, something like that.
No, there are two different. Yeah.
Cool. All right. What do I want to talk about here? Hey, you know what? We're going to talk about one of my favorite things to do in the wintertime. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about snowshoeing.
I thought it was drinking beer.
Well, that's after snowshoeing.
Okay.
And you know what? If you can go snowshoeing and find geocaches, that's like the best day ever in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the perfect winter day. Sleep in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you start with a nice rest, nice big breakfast. Grab your snowshoes. You go snowshoe geocaching for however long you want to on a beautiful winter snowy day up in the mountains or wherever you've got snow. And you go home for a nice hot steak dinner and then have a nice beer, put your feet up, log your cache finds, right aglow. Perfect day right there. And then call it in. 253693 TFTC. That's the perfect day.
Love it.
Yeah. So we'll talk about some specifics about helping you understand the components of a snowshoe. Like, what is a snowshoe? How does it work? We'll give you some tips on choosing snowshoes. Talk a little bit about use, how to actually use them, and other key things you might want to know or you really should know before you hit the trail on your first time out on snowshoes.
Now, I look at snowshoes as other types of winter foot apparel. Maybe not apparel, accessories. You know, I look at skis. Skis are somewhat complicated. Snowboards, a little bit. You know, I put snowshoes in that same category. I mean, there are a lot of different parts to a snowshoe. But I don't know what they are. I've never had a pair of snowshoes on my feet. But I really think it's something that I would enjoy.
I think you would. It's a hobby slash sport, whatever you want to call it, that is really accessible to pretty much anybody these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, I got a snowshoe right here. This is Mr. Monkey Snowshoes.
You just have a snowshoe with you at all times?
I do. Well, I'm Canadian. So as you're saying parts, you know what? The thing is that they look a little complex just because they've got little tassels and everything hanging off them, off the bindings. But a snowshoe is really four parts. You got the frame. Mm-hmm. So a snowshoe is going to have some sort of either metal or plastic frame around it. You have what's called the webbing, which is the material that actually gives you the lift off of the snow. And that covers most of the snowshoe. And then you have the bindings, which is the part here that your foot goes in, bindings. And last but not least, you have what are called crampons, which are the cleats, the metal cleats on the bottom of the snowshoe that give you your traction. So really that's it. And the variety you're going to see in most snowshoes that are available on the market today are just various combinations of these four components. And that's really, that's a snowshoe. That's all there is to it.
Well, that doesn't sound that complicated.
It's not.
You actually made it sound simple. So all snowshoes are made of the same four components.
Pretty much. There are some where the frame and the webbing are kind of one and the same. Often it's like a plastic body snowshoe. You'll see that most rentals that you'll see are made like that. You'll see them in the stores as well. They tend to be sort of almost a rectangular shape overall, and they're quite hardy. I've had a friend recently comment that they actually make great shovels for digging your truck out after you get back to the trailhead.
I think I've seen people do that. Actually, yeah.
But you know, otherwise, yeah, all four parts, and it is useful to understand the purpose of all those four parts.
Now, I've looked at, you know, Costco. Costco has snowshoes on sale at the moment. REI, but there's so many different types. I don't know what I'm looking for. How do I know I'm going to get the right ones?
Great, great question. So that's why it's important to understand the different components of the snowshoes. So you know, understanding the four components can help you make a decision about what you're going to buy. But honestly, the simplest way to decide on a purchase is to check the weight capacity rating, the crampons, which generally are going to be pretty much the same, but there will be more aggressive crampon types that are available. And we'll talk about that a little later. And so weight capacity rating, crampons, lesser degree. And the other big factor is how much are you willing to spend?
Oh, right. Wow.
Because you can spend like almost $1,000 on a pair of snowshoes if you really want to, but I really don't think you need to.
Good. Because I can't spend that much on a pair of snowshoes. I have trouble spending that much for a new car. Okay. So
yeah.
Did I tell you I'm cheap?
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
So, they're rated for different weights. Is that pretty much what you're looking for? Is that a universal system?
Right. So I talked about a weight capacity rating. That's pretty much yes, as a general rule. But like anything else in life, there's caveat emptor that rolls into that. But snowshoes usually are marked by an overall length. And the longer the shoe, it means the larger the webbing area and the more weight it can support. It kind of makes sense if you just think about mm-hmm. it from basic physics principles there. However, if you, they'll almost all have like a manufacturer's tag that'll have a little guide in it. Or the folks in the store should be able to help you out and break down the weight to size specifications for you. Sizing, generally when you go to, even Canada, when you go to the stores, they're in inches.
Works for me.
But they range in adult sizes from the smallest for an adult size is usually about 23 inches. And they range up to about 30 inches for most shoes. And each model in that range of size is going to have a load limit for that size. So they'll often have a little graph or chart that shows you, you know, for this weight range of, you know, X number of kilos or pounds to this number of kilos or pounds, you want the 26 inch snowshoe or something like that. So that gives you a guide to understand the best way to do it.
Well, if I just put the American principle to it, I should get the biggest ones I can afford, right? And that, there, I'm done.
Well, obviously you want to not go any smaller than your weight range, because then you'll find that you're sinking into the snow more than you need to. But I don't think the biggest ones I can afford is probably the best policy. Oh. You don't actually want to oversize your snowshoes. Again, as a general rule, or you're going to find it a little more difficult to walk than you'd like. Like I said, it's a general rule, because for some conditions like super deep powder or really long treks into the backcountry, you actually may want oversized snowshoes. But I think most of the people listening to this podcast are not going to necessarily be that aggressive in what they're looking for. So let's focus on general Northwest snowshoeing trail conditions. And so I would say just pay attention to the load range, use that to guide the length of the shoe that you want, and then just look for what's in your price range. It really can be that simple.
Well, it started off simple. Now it's sounding more complicated. So can someone say, like the land monkeys, just show up and show me what I'm supposed to do and where I'm supposed to go? You know, I suppose that rentals would be a good way to start, because, you know, what if I think this is going to be fun? I love it. I get out there and I'm like, oh, I don't like this. My legs don't move this way. This is just not a comfortable type of walk for me. I assume somebody like a MEC or an REI are going to be able to rent snowshoes to me and perhaps even have a beginning snowshoe course.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we talked about this a little bit on the previous podcast, but definitely let's get into it a little bit. Also, I noticed Dora Moore in the chat made a comment about women's snowshoes are slightly narrower than men's. That is true, as a general rule. Again, it depends on the manufacturer, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, if you put Mrs. Land Monkey snowshoes and mine side by side, hers are slightly narrower, even though they're from different manufacturers. That all said, back to your question. Yeah, you know, the best way to get started is, I always think the best way to get started is to rent a pair from an REI or MEC, or, you know, at the trailhead, if you're going to a ski resort or somewhere to go snowshoeing, and go along with someone who's snowshoed before. Because kind of the trickiest part you're going to find is your bindings. When you, if possible, when you get a rental pair, when you go in to rent them, get the person in the store to show you how the bindings work. That makes a huge difference. The bindings, here, I'm gonna grab my snowshoes, my snowshoe singular again here. The bindings are in all kinds of different styles. So different manufacturers and different models from different, from the same manufacturer sometimes can have different bindings. But in, as a general principle, what you have is a toe piece where the front of your foot goes in, and then it'll have straps that go over top that tighten up to hold your foot down onto the pivoting toe. And then you're going to have a heel loop that's going to go around the back of your heel and some mechanism to pull it taut and keep it in place. In general, that's what you're looking at. Then it'll have some sort of mechanism for it to tilt. As you see here, it tilts back and forth because, of course, as you step on the snow, your foot, when you go to walk, your foot tips up. So it does that and then lifts the shoe up with you. And it's pretty cool the way it works when you see it actually happening. But all that to say, the biggest thing that you're going to need is your first time out is some assistance with how to actually get those bindings on and tighten them up properly. Otherwise, you know, test those bindings before you go, even if it's just play around with it at home the night before you go or whatever, but take some time before you're actually at the trailhead and figure out how your bindings work.
Okay, I get that. It's the same with skis. You want to make sure that they're on and securely before you get going down the slopes at 60 miles an hour. That's probably not going to happen when you're snowshoeing, but you get the idea. Iham says in the chat, so when are the monkeys coming down south so we can go snowshoeing with someone who's been before? So you talked about, you know, different terrains, different types of snow. How do we know, I mean, if we're going out, we're not seeing what's out there. How do we know what type of snowshoe we should be using?
Right. So, if you're going to rent, you're just going to get what you get, and they're going to have probably pretty standard aggressiveness on the crampons. And when I say aggressiveness, what I'm talking about is, the metal crampons are effectively, steel teeth. Mm-hmm. On, I don't know if you can see this in the video feed or not, but they're effectively steel teeth, some on the heel of the snowshoe that generally are affixed to the webbing and don't lift, and some on the toe that will pivot with your foot. And the aggressiveness means how many teeth. Some of them will actually have crampons along the side of the frame as well for so really it's again, it's going to come down to if you're planning to do somewhere where maybe it's a little icier, you're going to want a little bit more grip, things like that. But honestly, if it's really icy, you probably just want to have trail crampons on and not snowshoes. Snowshoes are for when there's going to be some level of give to the ground, to the snow on the ground. So yeah, you know, honestly, if people are just getting started, I wouldn't even worry about the different styles of crampons. Like I said, longer crampons, more teeth is all just about having a more aggressive bite as you walk and traction at the end of the day, because obviously a large slippery surface with the webbing, there's not a lot of traction there. But again, I just wouldn't really, for beginners with snowshoes, even buying your first pair, I really wouldn't worry about the crampons as long as they, you know, they look like they're actually bolted on there well, and they're not going to come off on you or something crazy.
As long as there's something there, you should be okay.
Yeah.
So Dormore says, you know, do you think poles are necessary for snowshoeing? What are some of the things you should take with you I mean, obviously you've packed the 10 essentials because we've talked about that quite enough on this show to that you should know the 10 essentials, but make sure you're carrying that. Hey, if you're going out with somebody, you only need to carry 5 out of the 10. Just make sure your partner's carrying the other 5. Don't carry the same 5. You go out with 5 of the 10 essentials and it's not good.
Yeah, absolutely. So 10 essentials for sure. And I would always recommend poles. So I think that was Durham Moore's question, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you need poles?
Necessary? I think they are. One of the reasons is it really helps if you're going downhill. It gives you something to just give a little bit of push back because, again, you know, you've got a pretty big surface with that webbing. And even if you've got decent crampons on your snowshoe, it's only going to have so much grip on a wet, fairly fresh snow surface. So I would suggest definitely bring poles. You can use ski poles if you want. The advantage of hiking poles is that they are generally collapsible, or, you know, actual snowshoeing poles. Generally, they're collapsible so they can fit into your pack when you don't want to actually have them in your hands. If you're doing a long level stretch, sometimes, unless you find maybe you find you have a little bit of a challenge with your balance, or maybe it's a narrow trail, then the poles help continually on even on a level trail. I find if I'm doing a level bit for a while, the poles kind of get a little annoying and I just sort of throw them in the pack or whatever. But definitely uphill, downhill, poles are super helpful. The one thing I was going to say about hiking poles, the baskets on the bottom of the poles, you definitely want to have the baskets on when you're in the snow, because it actually is a notice. You'd think, come on, that's not actually going to help that much. It actually is a noticeable difference of keeping the pole from dropping down faster in the snow. The problem with the hiking poles is sometimes those baskets don't quite lock on properly, or they aren't tight and you can lose them. That's
whoops.
Really, really annoying. So,
that's exactly what Bryling just said in the chat.
Yeah,
poles. You want the baskets on them like you have on ski poles, or there aren't as much use as they push right through the snow.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So, yeah. So I would say definitely use poles, you know, and if you're using hiking poles with the removable baskets, make sure they're locked into position as best you can. And honestly, I would also say if they feel like they're not really locking in well, take one of the pieces of your basic repair kit, which would be some duct tape. Just wrap a little duct tape on to just hold it onto the pole so you don't lose them. Because if you lose it 10 meters back in deep snow, you're probably not going to find it again.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah. I just talked about basic repair kit. That's something else that you want to bring besides the 10 essentials and poles, is what I call a basic repair kit. And that can be as simple as duct tape and paracord. And a knife.
Okay.
Do
With
not
duct tape, paracord, and a knife. Can't you build your own snowshoes?
Yeah, and you know, some tree branches.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of tree branches you cut down.
Yeah, actually, you probably could. But the point being that between duct tape, paracord, and a knife, you have everything you need to do emergency field repair if either your webbing or your binding gives out. And I'm telling you, if you're 2 kilometers out from the trailhead, and either your webbing or your binding gives out, you want to fix it because that walk back is going to be brutal.
Yeah. When you've got one leg post-holing and the other's not.
Yeah, exactly. That's fun.
Are the snowshoes right foot, left foot, or are they universal?
That's a great question. They are, let me grab mine. They are actually footed. So trying to see where it says on mine. I think I just know these days. So mine don't actually say right foot, left foot, but I know Mrs. Monkey's do.
Dormore says hers has left and right on them.
Yeah, mine don't, but mine are, mine are from the 2010 Winter Olympics, shout out.
So they've expired.
So they're 8 years old, but, yeah, generally I've noticed the new ones do have right foot, left foot.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
So you've strapped these on. You feel secure. You've got a couple of pulls. Can you actually go geocaching?
Yeah, sure you can.
Okay.
But before you get going, snowshoeing is going to use some muscles that you're not used to using when you're just out for a regular hike. So I would really recommend doing a little bit of warm up, some stretches before you get going. It's really going to make a difference. And do those stretches and the warm up before you put the snowshoes on. Once you're in the bindings, it's a lot more awkward to stretch. The other piece of advice is, depending, I'm hoping people don't go out solo, because you should really not do that.
Well, that's true of hiking, not just snowshoeing, but going out in the winter, going out in the summer. You know, don't go on a long hike solo. You know, you got to take somebody with you.
There you go. So given that, the other thing I would say is plan out who's going to take turns breaking in the fresh snow if there's fresh snow on the trail. Now, if it's an already compacted or groomed trail, really doesn't matter too much. But I'll tell you, the 10 of us that went out a couple of weeks ago, that was a lot of work being in the front. And there's, I think, three of us. I think it was Lazy Bones, Three Hams, and myself were alternating. I think one or two other folks might have also alternated in there, taking turns breaking in the new snow. But it's a workout. It's a lot more work being in front than it is being in the back of the pack. So,
do you walk in the previous steps?
Well, basically, it only takes a couple of people before there's effectively just a flattened trail.
Okay.
So, you're not really. That's what I'm saying. Like, the first couple of people do most of the work, and everybody else gets a free ride.
So it's like flying in formation with geese.
Yes, yeah. It's exactly like that.
Okay, I get that. I get that. Okay, so we've got the snowshoes on. We've got them. We've got the right type of snowshoes for where we're walking. We've done our stretches and our warm up. Now, do we find caches?
Now do we find caches? Yeah, you know what? Yeah, okay. Definitely you do.
Because that's why I want to go out snowshoeing is to find caches.
That's one of the reasons if we're going. You know what, though? I have to say the last trip we went on, I didn't find any caches. I was hoping to find one at the end of the trail that I hadn't found before. And as a group, we dug around and we just could not find it. But at the end of the day, I thought, you know what? That's okay. We had an amazing time. Mm-hmm. We just had a great time on the trail. Beautiful scenery. Just the pictures some of the folks took, and I've got some video that I'm going to be editing together soon. It's just unbelievably beautiful out there. It was amazing. A lot of fun with the group. It was a lot of work, but a lot of fun. And at the end of the trail up at Goldie Lake, the Whiskey Jacks were out, and folks were having the Whiskey Jacks land in their hands and feeding them, and it was a lot of fun. So it was a great group, made for a great time. So even though I went out, I didn't find a single geocache that day. It was crazy, but still had a great time.
Well,
but
I was going to say, obviously the cache hiders didn't listen to last week's show about hiding winter caches, that they should be hung up in a tree, maybe not, you know, hidden at the bottom of the tree. I'm just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, but, you know, they're not necessarily intended to be snowshoe caches, the ones we were after.
Okay.
But they're up in the mountains where the snowshoe trails were. So anyways, if you're going to go, definitely bring some form of collapsible shovel. Or as one of our caching friends does, a ice pick, like a climbing ice pick, works mm-hmm. fantastic for digging through the snow quickly. And if the snow gets a little icy, then you've got that tool. I don't know, you could use some sort of probe, like an avalanche probe, if you happen to have one.
You've got your poles, right?
Could take the basket off your pole and use that as a probe, sort of mm-hmm. poke through the snow until you hear a clunk. You can do that. The problem is, at that point, you kind of risk damaging the cache. So,
especially if it's plastic and it's exactly. cold, it'll get brittle.
Yeah.
But an ice pick won't hurt it?
Well, if you don't, I mean, the idea is you try not to, directly hit the cache with it, but there you go.
Okay. Well, I still want to go out and do it. Let's see. In the chat, Stark Casher said, last year, our local Metro Park had an introduction to snowshoeing event where they provided the snowshoes, gave instruction, and then took the participants out for a walk around the playfield.
Awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I know REI does events in the area. Of course, you know, it's not free, but it includes a snowshoe rental and, you know, professional guide to help you. So I'm sure other outdoor groups will also do it. Like the Land Monkeys putting on an event. I was just tossing that out there. Perhaps it could happen.
Yeah, that could happen. Maybe not this winter because the weather's just been so weird
that it's been hard to predict
2 weeks ahead and say, yeah, that'll be good. I mean, case in point, the hike we did with our friends, Dora Moore had arranged that and ended up not being able to go. So just because of the conditions were so crazy that day. So it's hard, at least in this part of the Northwest here around Metro Vancouver, to plan ahead event styles. So, mm-hmm. The guaranteed 2 weeks ahead, yes, this is going to happen. But I think that's awesome. And a lot of I know REI does learn to snowshoe events like that. So does MEC. What else? I was just looking at the chat a moment ago.
I want to
share something. Dora Moore made a comment, said, I've snowshoed before, but not while caching. I'm nervous of going off the trail in snowshoes. I don't know if I'm going to fall down a tree well or some such thing. And I think that's a really, really good point. And this is one of the reasons we say don't snowshoe by yourself. Because if you do go down into a tree well, you're going to have a bugger of a time getting out by yourself. You can do it, but it's really difficult. The other thing is, the more you snowshoe and the more you go out with people who kind of know what the terrain looks like and what they're looking for, the less likely you are to do things like that. So, case in point, when we were out with the group, there would be points where we would look at things and go, yep, no, we're not going to go that way because I can just see the lay of the land. Mm-hmm. And I know that, there's a gully there, or that's, there's a creek running underneath that. So we'll kick some snow down into it before we cross, or tree wells. Right. And, I know even a couple of folks from our trip did end up falling into a tree well at one point, but we're able to help each other get out. So, it happens. And it's not the end of the world if you've got somebody else there to just help you out. And then what the real learning lesson is, you go, okay, I remember what that looked like before I stepped over there. So now I know this is not a good place to go walk. So.
Interesting. Okay. GeoNav Pro says in the chat, tree wells often hurt when you get home. Karen landed in too.
Yeah, that was the GeoNav Pros, Mrs. GeoNav Pros who mm-hmm. hit them. But Mr. GeoNav Pros was there right beside her and able to help her get out. So that's really kind of the key. There you have it.
Okay. Wow.
It's an active chat tonight.
It really is. I'm working hard to keep up with FATAS items.
It's going to be a busy FATAS tonight, which is awesome. We love that. So thank you, everybody who's participating.
Exactly. So if you, in the chat, listening later, have any tips, tricks about snowshoeing, especially here in the Northwest, and geocaching, send those in. You can tweet us at CachingNW. You can email us at feedback@cachingnw.com or call into 253-693-TFTC and let us know your tips and tricks for snowshoe geocaching in the Northwest.
Awesome. Hey, why don't we talk a little bit about our upcoming shows?
We'd love to talk about our upcoming shows.
Why don't you lead off?
Okay, I will. February 8th, that's just next week. We're already into February. That's 1 month out of this year gone. Boof. We'll never have it back. But next week, we're going to talk about winter games and geocaching. What could winter games be referring to?
Well, we didn't talk about milk jug snowshoes tonight.
Oh, yes.
But we probably will next week.
Milk jug snowshoes.
But I'm also, we'll talk about some of those kind of winter games. But I think also I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics, because February 8th, we'll be starting into the Olympics.
Exactly. Here. February 15th, that's the day after Valentine's Day. Now, I'm just going to take a moment here. Guys, if you're listening, don't wait until February 13th to go out and buy your special someone that Valentine gift. It's too late. You want to go now, okay? It's 2 weeks. You can hide it somewhere. Don't worry about it. Go get it now, and then you'll be ready, and you look like a hero. So the day after Valentine's Day, it could be you've slept on the sofa the night before because you didn't heed my advice, or you've had a good night's sleep. Either way, we're going to talk about creative cash containers with Lazy Bones.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Lazy Bones has created some really great cash containers up here in the Metro Vancouver area. If you've done any of his geocaches, you can appreciate the effort he puts into them. So I'm really looking forward to him sharing some of his tips and tricks. That'd be great.
Nice.
So then rolling forward, February 22nd, episode 239, we're going to do a geocaching apps roundup. We'll just give you some insight into what apps are out there and available, and what's the state of the art for geocaching apps. That'll take us around to March 1st. That'll be episode 240. We're going to repeat the concept of top cache tips, and this time we're going to focus on Victoria, British Columbia, and we're going to have special guests, the Landsharks, come in to tell us about geocaching in their stomping grounds.
Ooh, I like it when they stomp around.
Yeah, with snowshoes on.
It could be snowshoes, yeah.
Could be.
We might have to set up an event in Victoria. You know, we've been thinking about this. So maybe we take a ferry up there, do an event in Victoria, come back on the same day, get some geocaching done. Because, you know, we like to go caching in the Northwest. Just Absolutely. Had to throw that out there.
There you go. Well, you know what? So make sure you listen to the March 1st episode, episode 240, to get all those tips so that you can get ready for when we decide to put on that geocaching event up in Victoria.
Exactly.
All right. Well, in the meantime, I want to thank our faithful Denali level supporters. And, you know, I made a mistake last week. I forgot to mention our newest Denali level supporter, Bounce Bounce. So Bounce Bounce, I apologize. Thank you for being our newest Denali level supporter, along with Team Squirrel and worldcaching.com. And folks, if you want to know more about supporting the show, remember to click that Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. Now, shout out, as I like to do every week, to all of our patrons. That would be Subway Mark, Doramore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, Geo Nav Pros, Wino Seattle, Acker Doc, OBXG, Camp Clan, B Pendragon, Billy Robson, and Kev MacD. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Now, as we do every week, until next week, where can our loyal, very faithful listeners find us if they wanted to stalk you on the interwebs there, Land Monkey?
Well, you know, a new video went out last night on YouTube. So you can always find us on YouTube by just searching Land Monkey, LANMONKEY. But the easiest place to follow us is get onto Twitter or Instagram or even Periscope, although I guess Periscope, you really access that Twitter. But follow us at LandMonkeyGC. It's right there behind me. At LandMonkeyGC. Follow us. We would love to have you follow us. All right. And, you know, our good friend Wits End wasn't able to make it here tonight. He did a little cameo right at the start, but I want to encourage you guys to follow Wits End on Twitter, Facebook, geocaching.com, Elo. And then on Google Plus, he's Wits End US. And you know what? We missed him tonight. And if you missed him tonight, send him a tweet at Wits End on Twitter and just let him know you missed him tonight, because we missed him tonight. How about you, Chris?
Well, you know, yes, I missed him too. I know that's what you were asking. you know, you can find me. Well, let's. No, you did it. You said everywhere. Wits End. Sorry. I was actually looking at the chat. I'll admit it. I was doing something else.
All right. So where do people find you?
Find me on Twitter, CachingNW, Facebook.com/CachingNW. Head on over to YouTube. That's YouTube.com/CachingNW. Or go to CachingNW.com/hosts. You can read our bios and find all those silly links we just mentioned. Because it's so hard to always stop the car, get the pen and paper out, and write those links down.
That's right. So, you know, it sounds like we're just about to wrap up the show, but remember, we've got some more coming as soon as we finish the credits here.
The after show.
That's right. It's coming, baby. All right. Well, folks, thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. Remember that you can be a part of the show by calling 253-693-TFTC, leaving us a comment asking a question, or sending us a malfunctioning pair of electric socks any time of the day or the night. Of course, you can email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Your support helps to keep quality shows coming, so if you liked this show, please click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. This particular show is produced by Chris Umfener and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris J. and Jim Paulwitz. The show is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license. Copy All Right, 2018 by Chris Umfener. And now, folks, stay tuned for
The After Show.
It's like he's here.
Just keeps me from missing him too much.
I know. Hey, folks, if you're new to Caching in the Northwest, you know, we've wrapped up the official show. We like to continue and do what we call the after show. It's a time for us to be able to connect with those who have joined us live. We answer some questions. We talk about all sorts of different topics, not just snowshoeing or other things, depending on what the topic of the show is.
If almost anything.
Almost anything. Yeah, there are and there are even some glows we will not read. Sorry, Brayling. But if you have to go, we understand. Thank you for listening to Caching in the Northwest. Now, on with
The After Show.
I love that. That never gets old to me.
It's one of those that's really well done. Hey, the chat is incredibly busy tonight.
It is, and I saw new names in the chat tonight.
Yes.
One
of the new names I saw was Siberian Sun.
Ooh.
And they asked, has anyone done cross-country skiing geocaching?
Did anybody answer that?
I don't know. I've done cross-country skiing in Ohio, but I wasn't geocaching because, well, it hadn't been invented yet.
Yes.
Because I'm really old.
Back in my day. So I also have done cross-country skiing before I was a geocacher. Not a lot of it. I tended to be a downhill skier and a snowshoer. So cross-country skiing is, it's not something I've done a lot of. But, you know, Siberian Sun, if you've got experience cross-country skiing and geocaching, we would love to hear about it.
Yeah.
And anybody who's listening to this, if you've got some experience with cross-country skiing and geocaching, well, you know, send us an email. Let us know about your experiences. What do you think is the best part or worst part about that?
Interesting. I think it would be somewhat difficult just because of the length of the skis. It's not easy to get to something in front of you. And, you know, like downhill skiing, you're a little less stable.
Yeah. Well, I think the trail would have to kind of be designed for cross-country ski geocaching. Like, so you'd want to have small containers hanging, and hanging reasonably far out on the branches. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along. I don't know. somebody call in and correct me.
Okay.
There you go.
Broncos fan for life.
Yes.
Says there's a coin challenge in Roseburg Saturday. That's GC7 Echo Mike 7 X-ray.
Nice.
And the Ape Mega event, it's coming back.
Oh, good.
That's GC7 Hotel Juliet Bravo November.
Awesome. Very cool. Hey, you know what? Speaking of Broncos Fan for Life, if you're listening, get in touch with me because I want to have you come on the show and talk about some of these events.
Well,
so let's connect and get that sorted out.
She's not done yet.
Oh, but wait,
there's
more.
She also talks about registration levels are live on the GeoCoinFest site.
Ah.
That's GeoCoinFest. Golf Foxtrot C. No, Golf Charlie Foxtrot 2018.com. GCF.com.
As in GeoCoinFest.
GeoCoinFest.com.
Yeah. Got it. Very cool. Well, you know what? We would love to have... Yes, sir. Thank you. I love it when people call me sir. Makes me feel like I'm semi-mature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, we refer to you as Mr. Monkey. Does that help?
It really does.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Speaking of GeoCoin Fest, we had talked before about maybe doing something live at GeoCoin Fest for the podcast.
We should.
That might be kind of fun, do a live show.
GeoCoin Fest is in our neck of the woods, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no reason not to go. Now, there are registration levels, and a lot of that was in the chat. Of course, you can go to GCF2018.com, look at those registration levels. I'm going to go out on a limb and say there should be a free registration level. And, you know, so if you can't afford to get some swag, of course, attend.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Hey, you know what? At this point in the show, I would actually like to do a couple of shout-outs.
Please do.
The first shout-out is to my friend Greg. If you are listening to the podcast, I hope life is going well and that you can get your new dog and your kids out and do some geocaching if the rain lets up a little bit. So, Greg, thanks for listening. And my other shout-out is to my good buddy Wes, who I share an office with.
How much of that had you had to drink?
Because he was able to give me this very nice vanilla porter that I am enjoying during the show tonight. And so thanks, Wes. I appreciate that. That is very enjoyable this evening. All right. Hey, look at this. In the chat, Alpine's GC, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, Alpine's GC says, I had some success cross-country caching in Manning Park. Up in British Columbia. I love Manning Park. It's one of my favorite places to go. So that's awesome. Thank you, Alpani. So the Siberian Sun, yes, Alpani's GC has some experience with that. So Alpani's GC, I would love to hear more about your experiences with that. So, you know, maybe follow up on that.
Nice.
Reach out to us. Connect with us. Let us know your thoughts about that.
Keepers of the Cash Flow said, we have an event coming up that's hosted on a frozen lake. Not sure how often. You could ski snowshoe, but most ski-do out to GC7 Foxtrot 3 Kilo November.
I love snowmobiling. That would be amazing.
Bounce likes to snowmobile. He's talked about it a couple of times.
It's fun. It is so much fun. Yeah. Cool. What else do we have?
IHAM in the chat also says REI has some good how to choose your snowshoe size pages.
Awesome. There you go. So that's probably even better advice than listening to me. I would guarantee Mountain Equipment Co-op, MEC.ca, has similar pages on there. Very, very cool.
Nice. Now, Three Hams talked about a trip he took snowshoeing.
Oh, yeah. This is a good story. I like this one.
He says, I FTF'd about 26 geocaches in one day because I was willing to snowshoe many miles in the dead of winter. Thankfully, they were all tree hangers. There were about 80 more caches ahead of me. That was on the KVR series near Big White past Kelowna. And yes, I snowshoed on my own out of cell range, but I had the 10 essentials.
There you go. So would not advise snowshoeing on your own like Three Hams does, but
now
he got back safe and we're glad he did.
Caching in the Northwest does not promote this type of behavior, even though we just read it here on the podcast.
Caching in the Northwest does not promote a lot of the behavior Land Monkey does.
Oh, that's true.
Do as I say, not as I do.
That's right.
All right. Anyways, but yeah, and that KVR series is pretty cool. We haven't done it ourselves, but we love the pictures that Three Hams took and shared with us from his epic winter FTF adventure. And we're definitely looking forward to heading out and doing some of those.
Nice. Now, IHAM also asked, how did everyone's Australia Day events go? Hmm. Well, I attended one early in the morning. Well, early-ish, 9. You know, it meant it was an hour away from my house, so it required a little more work, right? And it was very well attended. The room that they had set aside it filled up quickly, and we pretty much took over the rest of the coffee shop. So it very well attended. That one was put on by friends of the show, Buddy and Kitsy Meow.
Nice. I haven't talked to those guys in ages. I like those guys.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of friends of the show.
And let's see, there were people there who were going to hit 7 or 8 Australia Day events that weekend.
Seven or eight?
I think there were 7 in one day and then 1 again on Sunday morning.
That's cuckoo pants.
Yeah.
That is a lot of events.
I don't know if cuckoo pants is the official term, but yes, you're right.
There you go. Keep it to the cash flow says in the chat, if the missus wasn't due to give birth the next day, we would be attending the event, but I don't want to risk this year. That sounds like, you know, good advice.
Pretty good advice.
I think that's well thought out there. Also shares that MEC also has snowshoe rentals, including ones for kids. Just learned about that this week. So,
oh, nice.
And
those are pretty much milk cartons. The kid snowshoes. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not huge, but you know, again, it's relative to the weight that you're putting on the shoes. So very cool.
Let's see. GSMX2 said, oops, hang on. It just scrolled off for me. I went to 3 of them on Friday, hosted 1 on Sunday. They all went well. So thank you for that.
Very cool. So yeah, we went out to Mrs. Monkey and I met a bunch of the listeners of this podcast from up in our neck of the woods, as well as a whole bunch of other friends, geocaching friends, at Kev MacD's event on Sunday. So that was out in New Westminster in the rain, but we had a great time. It was good to see them. I saw one of my friends who I used to go to Hackspace with all the time, and I haven't seen him in ages. So one of the Geek Boys.
Ah.
So it was really nice to get caught up with him. So yeah, it's always good.
Iham gave a little definition. He says, there's a challenge for doing 7 events in 7 or fewer days. Several folks are making use of the Australia Day events to qualify.
There you go.
I didn't know that. It's still crazy pants. Cuckoo pants, sorry.
Cuckoo pants.
Cuckoo pants, yeah.
That's the technical term.
Yeah. Bounce Bounce asks, is anyone going to the Great Balls of Fire event this weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I say event. It's not a geocaching event?
No, there are geocaching events associated with it.
Ah.
Yeah, and 2 CETOs and an event.
To pick up all those things that people have littered?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it's quite the thing. And that's in, what, Kama Beach, right?
Yes. Yes, that's right, Kama Beach.
That looks like a beautiful place to go.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't
already have plans this weekend, but I would love to. It's one of the things that I want to do, and the monkey balls here in Tacoma are another one. Oh, I got land monkey with that one. That's
all right. Yeah, I just don't know how to
respond. Your lighting changed. Your face turned all red.
Yeah. Yeah, trying not to, I don't know. I'm just going to let that one go at this point in time. I
think yeah.
For our ratings.
Monkey Shines. Monkey Shines. Thank you. That was it. Monkey
that's
Shines
a
event.
Lot better.
But aren't they glass balls? Anyway.
There you go. Yes, there you go. Starcatch says, crazy pants is the U.S. conversion of the Canadian cuckoo pants. And Rylang does say that. It is all amaze balls.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I'm not going there.
I really want to know if that's caught on at HQ yet. after Chris saying that he was going to bring that comment back there. That was too funny. All right. So what do you think, my friend?
I think we have done a great show. Thank you all for joining us. We can't do it without you.
We can't. Hey, I'm going to interrupt you before because I know you're just about to wrap it up. But do we have anything new for the patrons or anything coming soon for the patrons that we want to?
All coming soon, yes.
Okay, so we got some special content coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. All right. Stay tuned, you guys. And thank you again for being patrons.
And until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.